Now, yesterday, towards the tail end of the programme, we were talking about the refugees coming in from Syria, and I was expressing surprise at the number of people who seem to be objecting to reaching out the arms of welcome to the refugees. I want you to listen to this report that was broadcast just before the British airstrikes in Syria. It was a special report from John Irvine for ITV News, basically laying out the lay of the land in Syria. And to do it, he had to go and cross the border into Syria. It was a breathtaking report, to say the least. Here's a reminder of that report from John Irvine.
"Hit it," shouts the Kurdish commander as his men open fire on the lorry bomb. IS has no more potent weapon, but our allies stand their ground. They shoot the driver and the attack comes up short. But sadly, the Kurds can't stop all the suicide attacks. Two of their number were killed in this one. As boots on the ground go, they might not look like much, but the Syrian Kurds, known as the YPG, are by far the most dependable friends Britain has got here. We've just spent several days with them as they've consolidated recent advances and defended their front lines. It's a lonely drive to their furthest flung base down south, about 30 miles short of Raqqa. Not long ago, this territory was part of the self-proclaimed caliphate, and so we avoided many roads because of the threat of booby traps. Shortly after making it to this position, it became clear that the Kurdish fighters had had a busy morning. This is as far as the Kurds have advanced. ISIS positions are about 2.5 miles that way. Here lie the bodies of a dozen ISIS fighters who tried an assault on this Kurdish position earlier today. Two of them are wearing suicide vests. ISIS had mounted a sneak attack using early morning fog as cover, but they were spotted in time. The Kurds killed them all and suffered no losses on their side. It was striking how young they all were, both those lying on the ground and those standing over them."
That report from John Irvine across in Syria, as I say, broadcast just before the British airstrikes were rubber-stamped. And John is available to speak to us. He was with us here in UTV for long and many's a day. Johnny, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Johnny, I'm just thinking, as I look at that report again and listen to your commentary, that's a huge risk that you and the camera crew take to go into Syria to bring a report like that. Do you give that much consideration?
Well, of course you do, yes. But I mean, I trusted my team. We had a security consultant with us who's former SAS. My cameraman, long-standing, is Sean Swan from Dublin, who used to work in Havelock House back in the day. Sean and I have been a team for, 12, 13 years now. I had a very good Arabic producer with me, a guy called Lutfi Abu On, who's based in Beirut. And we trusted our hosts initially, the Kurds in Iraq, and then when we crossed over the border, the River Tigris in northwestern Iraq is basically the border between that part of Iraq and Syria. And I trusted our hosts on the other side of the border in Syria. They're Kurds. Iraqi Kurdish fighters are known as the Peshmerga. Syrian Kurdish fighters are known as the YPG. We joined the YPG in a Kurdish area, a pretty safe Kurdish area in northeastern Syria. And then we took our time moving south westwards towards Raqqa. I mean, on the face of it, there are risks, but we felt it was worth it to try to inform the British audience exactly what sort of war Parliament was contemplating us joining, and we wanted to get that sort of insight. Plus, I wanted to do a favour for the Kurds, who I think are our only reliable allies there. Yes, they're mostly Muslims, but their ethnicity is far more important to them than their religion. They believe in equality. They've got as many women fighters as they have men in Syria. And as I say, I wanted to do them a favour.
The report was very clear that these people were expecting help from Britain, and you felt that they were very much on the side of the Western allies, so to speak. And it came across as well in the report that it was a particularly dangerous area, and there had been a gunfight just before you arrived at one outpost. And there were, I think, 12 ISIS terrorists lying dead on the ground.
Right.
You made the point of both those who killed them and those who were lying there being relatively young. As you stand in a zone like that where people are lying dead, Johnny, and I know you've covered many tragedies in the past. You were in Baghdad. I remember you being in Baghdad the time the American soldiers arrived. And on the other side of the coin, you were practically caught up in the Boxing Day tsunami. You've seen tragedies of many sorts. But when you stand there with those dead terrorists on the ground, what's going through your mind?
To do my job, to film as quickly as we could, to get myself and my team out of there as soon as possible. The Kurds who'd won that battle, that was their little outpost, they didn't want us to hang about because the place had been mortared the day before. But looking at the bodies, I must admit, I didn't feel a scintilla of sympathy for them. I thought of Paris. I thought of British tourists on that beach in Tunisia. I thought of the Yazidis persecuted, forced out of their home in Sinjar last year by these monsters in this death cult, ISIS. And here were 12 of them who seemed to be hell-bent on dying, and the Kurds had made that happen.
And does it ever cross your mind, as you're travelling in that small convoy that you were in, that if ISIS were to hijack you, that you would be a prime meat for them? You would be someone who'd be a very useful hostage that they could make the most of, and at the end of the day, they would probably execute you.
Yes, I mean, obviously it crosses your mind, but as I say, I was confident in our hosts. The YPG are anxious to curry favours from the Western powers. Their counterparts in northern Iraq have actually done very well since the 2003 Iraq War. If you're looking for someone who won the second Iraq War, it is the Iraqi Kurds. Iraqi Kurdistan is booming, mainly due to the oil business. By comparison, the Syrian Kurdish area ruled by the YPG is very poor, and they're hoping that there will be a dividend for them if they support Western efforts to battle ISIS in that part of the world. But yes, I think kidnapping is probably your worst fear. And so, Frank, we didn't hang about. I mean, that filming those 12 dead, that was a half-hour job after a six-hour drive. So we spent 12 hours in a car that day and half an hour filming to secure, to make ourselves as secure as possible.
And then it's a run back for the border. Is that the way it works?
Well, yeah, we stayed in a town called, I better not say where it is. We stayed in a town up in northeastern Syria, and we moved from Safa. We were there for about 4 nights all in all. It took a long time to organize things. Communications aren't, you can't set everything up on the phone beforehand. You actually have to go and meet people. And in that part of the world, it's better to sit down and have coffee and break bread and build up a relationship. And we spent some time doing that, moving from different safe houses each night. But then we filed that report from this town. I did a live shot in pouring rain into News at 10. And then the following morning, we hightailed it out of there. It's not the sort of place you hang about. You have a fixed plan. You know who you're going to do it. You know who you're going to be with. You go in, do it, and leave.
You've been at the cutting edge, as I say, of so many stories, Johnny. And you know, when you're here in Belfast, I'm sure you cut your teeth on the horrors of the troubles here. But as you travel the world and find yourself in war zones and at scenes of disaster. How do you cope at a personal level? I know you say you're reporting it and you've a duty to do and you're concentrating on your job, but it's bound to have an impact.
Well, I mean, one always tries to be as compassionate as possible, Frank. But I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's not my job to get upset about these things. It's my job to try to reflect what's happened as accurately as possible. And sometimes if you do it well, for example, after the tsunami or after something like the Haiti earthquake, if you report it well, you can help these people. The DEC appeal after Haiti raised a phenomenal amount of money, and that was mainly thanks to television news coverage on ITV, mainly by myself and another old Belfast boy, Bill Neely, who has since left ITV News and is now making millions with an American network, NBC.
I'm sure Bill is, Johnny. Johnny, just one final serious question regarding the situation in Raqqa and Syria in general, now that the airstrikes have started, and how you're viewing it as a professional reporter. Do you think progress is going to be made?
The only thing I can say, Frank, is where we were in northern Syria, airstrikes had been quite effective in clearing territory. It's wide open plains of arable land with quite isolated communities, and I think ISIS fighters found it very hard to hide in places like that. So what you had was, I mean, airstrikes have been happening in Syria, remember, for a year now, and just before the Paris attacks, the coalition mounted a serious aerial bombardment in tandem with the YPG, the Syrian Kurds, and this advance made the caliphate shrink quite significantly over the last 3 weeks. They took more than 200 towns and villages in less than a month. I think the problem comes is when you're trying to liberate big strongholds like Raqqa in Syria or Mosul in Iraq, and I think that shows the limits of air power, and still we're not quite clear who the stormtroopers of liberating those cities are going to be when it comes to it. I think what you're going to see is a push by the Americans for some sort of ceasefire in the other Syrian war, the war being fought between rebels of various hue and the Assad regime. They're pushing for a ceasefire, and then they want everybody basically to concentrate on beating the Islamic State. It's not giving Assad a Bible forever. The Assad regime has killed more people in Syria than anybody else, but they're not trying to kill us. They're not trying to kill Western targets. Only Islamic State's doing that. And I think the Western powers want to now deal with Islamic State first and Assad second.
It is a very complex issue. And as a result, there are refugees, thousands, hundreds of thousands of refugees. I think we're taking about 50. And there are already voices, and I heard them yesterday on this programme from Belfast, who don't want any Syrian refugees coming to Northern Ireland. As someone who's from Belfast, someone who's reporting out there, and someone who's hearing that there is a voice in Belfast that says, we don't want those refugees, how does that make you feel?
Well, I mean, I have to say I covered the refugee crisis quite a bit over the summer, and I mean, most of them are not opportunists who are coming to pick up our dole. Most of these people are absolutely desperate, and if you go to the part of Syria that I was in, you see how poor it is after years of persecution by the Assad regime, decades of persecution by the Assad regime, and now years of war. The situation for them is absolutely hopeless. Now, I understand people's reservations about letting Syrian refugees in. You know, they're wondering, are they vetted? Will they just bring their war to our doorstep? In the first instance, I think Europe has done reasonably well in saving them, but how you keep them in the region, I think is the answer to this question. The answer can't be for them to constantly come our way, because they have a different culture. Many of them have no skill set whatsoever, so integration is going to be very difficult. I mean, there are young men, you know, who've missed out on 5 years of education because of war, and I can't I don't know how they're going to be assimilated. It is an incredibly complex question, and actually British government policy at the minute is to try to make life better for them in the region, in the camps that surround Syria, in places like Jordan, Lebanon and Turkey, and to try to keep them in situ. And I think in the grand scheme it might sound quite callous, but I think that's probably a better idea.
It's interesting.
To try to keep them there and give them the prospect of a future there, because most of them would like a future there. Most of them don't want to come to Europe. They want to leave Syria.
Yeah, it is interesting that you say that, and you're saying it as someone who is in the area, who's observing it, and who's actually been in the camps. Will you get a chance, John, to come home for Christmas? Do you get that opportunity?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I will be. Yes, no, I'm lucky enough to be coming back for a week or so over Christmas. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing Belfast again, family and friends.
But can you? Is it coming home for Christmas per se, or is it coming home for Christmas and that phone could ring and back you'd have to go?
Well, yes. That's the job. It's the news business, and your phone has to be on. Yeah.
Really appreciate you taking the call from us this morning, Johnny, and thanks very much for your time. And when you're going in and out of there, please, on behalf of everyone here, stay safe. Okay.
I will, Frank. Thank you very much indeed.
That's Johnny Irvine, formerly of UTV, of course, who's bringing us some very important coverage of the crisis in Syria.